lose a bowl game.
Welcome to the State of the Gamecocks podcast. Here are your hosts, Brooks and Drew.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the State of the Gamecocks podcast. My name is Brooks Davis, joined alongside by my co-host, Drew Bonds. Drew, how you doing?
I couldn't be better. We are, at least as they record, 99 days away from kickoff in Orlando against Central Florida. And I'm ready to go. The pacing around the apartment and the checking Twitter every 20 minutes to see if there's anything to talk about is getting out of hand at this point and ready to start playing football. But we got 3 months until we get to that point. The roster is sort of kind of almost set, minus, you know, what we'll see is, you know, hopefully keep the injuries to a minimum and that kind of thing. The roster's pretty much where it's going to be. We've got several new additions to talk about. This will be kind of the last big list of additions before the season starts, which is good. We kind of finally have the shape of the roster together. And then we have our little giveaway that we never got to do. We'll get into that at the very end. But Brooks, how are you doing?
Doing good. Yeah. Like you said, we are T-minus 100 days till kickoff in Orlando. And it's one of those, it's starting to get on my mind a little bit more and more as the days go by, as college baseball season's wrapping up. As the time of recording this, Jack State's playing Louisiana Tech in the Conference USA tournament. College baseball season's starting to wrap up a little bit. Of course, in pro sports, MLB's in full swing, and MLB's winding down, NHL's winding down, and you know we're entering talking season, as Steve Spurrier so famously said. we'll have media days, Conference USA media days coming up. Trying to find the tweet. Not too long ago, not too long. July 22nd, in Frisco, Texas, at the PGA of America headquarters. Of course, head coach Charles Kelly will be there, but he's also taking Darrell Prater and wide receiver Michael Petway with him too. So we'll be looking forward to July 22nd to get to hear from Coach and those two guys and hear what their expectations are for the season, and get a little bit more information as of where the team stands and how they're progressing, how things are coming along with the new staff, new team, just everything that's so brand new about this Gamecocks squad. Could not be more excited about it, I should say, as we inch closer and closer to kick off against the Knights of Central Florida. But speaking of everything that is new, as you said, Drew, the roster is pretty much completely taken shape, I guess. Everybody that's there's liable to be a few cuts here and there before the start of fall camp. But for the most part, everybody who is on the roster and who's going to be on the team is in Jacksonville right now, and we got a whole slew of transfer commits and signees since the J Day game when we last talked to you. We're going to go through one by one. We don't have a ton of information on some of these guys, but others we do. Do you want to start us off?
Yeah. The first one is Jaheim Jenkins. He committed actually the day that we released the J Day podcast. So it's been a while since he committed from Eastern Michigan. Played a little bit there last year, so we actually saw him when we went to Ypsilanti. How that game finished, but we did see him last year. Whether we really noticed or not, he was an Eagle last year, and then. Probably the second biggest signing for me is Traquan Fegans from Central Florida. He was a former four-star commit. He hasn't had a ton of playing time in his career, but we're taking players from the team that we're opening the season from is probably not a bad thing. especially a former four-star. He was a top 100 recruit. He went to Southern Cal. He's been in Alabama also, and was at UCF last year. So he's been around the block in the portal. This will be his fourth school. And Feagans is a defensive back's last name, isn't it? Like, if you ever heard of a corner last name, I mean, Feagans is a corner last name, right? I mean, that's what I thought when I heard that. I was like, that guy plays corner.
It fits.
Anyway, like I said, been around the block, Alabama, USC, UCF, and now he's at Jack State. Certainly happy to have him. So those were the earliest two. Cam Bell transferred from FAU as a tight end. Caleb Coombs transferred from FAU as a receiver. So sorry, Cam Bell FAU and Caleb Coombs FAU. So two guys from Florida Atlantic that have transferred. Franklin Barrett, another wide receiver from Appalachian State. And then the biggest name that got the most buzz was Trevor Woods, who committed from Colorado as a safety linebacker hybrid and played in pretty much all 12 games or all 13 games that Colorado played last year. He played pretty much the entire year. So he's a guy who you would certainly imagine is a plug and play into this defense, especially having, being familiar with Charles Kelly and how that defense works. He's going to be one of the more experienced guys on roster and the guy that played it up at a Power Four school last year and played meaningful playing time and had, three interceptions and three forced fumbles over the last 2 years. So he's a guy that can make plays also. So really excited about him. Got a long snapper from Arizona State. Sorry. I'm going to butcher Cole's last name. Marzalek, I think is how we're going to say that at long snapper. So,
that sounds good.
Yeah, Cole, Marzalek, so we're going to go with that. And then Caleb Nix, Bo Nix's brother, who played safety, was at Clemson last year. He's from Phoenix City, Alabama, entered in the portal as well. So a big slew of names. And then the last name came a couple days ago. Oliver Maldonado, who is a high school signee, offensive lineman out of Birmingham. So likely a redshirt season for him, but he came about 6 days ago signed. So that's the full list. Like we said, we don't have a ton of information about everybody as of right now. A lot of these guys haven't had solid playing time. Trevor Woods has, and that's the one that, kind of like we said, that we're most excited about. Him and I think Traquan Feagans are both going to play big roles on the defense. But Brooks, besides those two names, anyone that sticks out to you?
No, yeah, those are the big ones. I think Caleb Coombs could come in and have a pretty significant impact on the wide receiver room. 51 receptions for 407 yards and two touchdowns in his time with the Owls. But we certainly saw a trend of the positions that he was really looking to. And it was what we lost the most of last year, and that's defensive backs and wide receivers. It's another one of those positions you can't have too many of them, and especially for a defensive guy like Charles Kelly, I think he's going to do really well with some of these guys. Traquan Feagans, certainly Trevor Woods, who is very familiar with Charles Kelly and his defensive system, was played under him during his 1 year at Colorado with Deion Sanders. It's good to see, you definitely can tell, or it's good to see that he's the like I said, the two positions that we lost a great deal of in the offseason after Rich Rod left. That's really where he's making an emphasis in the transfer portal. I think he did a good job. We really don't have a ton of information on these guys yet. It's the way that college football works nowadays. If you're going to be competitive, if you're going to, and especially for a school of our stature and our size, that, so many guys, a lot of our key, de- like, you know, a lot of our key defensive backs went to Jameer Latimer, and Fred Perry went to West Virginia with or Jameer Latimer did him. I can't remember where Fred Perry went. He did go to West Virginia, didn't he?
Yeah, Fred Perry was he transferred to West Virginia with the rest of the roster.
Went to West Virginia with Rich Rod, and you know, it's the grind of college football now. You school our size, we're gonna have to replace guys like that every year. We're gonna have, you know, a lot of our big name talents are in their junior senior seasons are gonna go and play somewhere a little bit bigger. Typically, they're gonna get some NIL money thrown at them, and we just got to keep plugging in. Keep finding these guys, and it looks like Kelly's done a pretty good job. We'll have to see what kind of production they put out on the field, but so far I like a lot of the names and what information we're able to gather about them. Most of the guys are going to be pretty solid contributors.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree. And one little Trevor Woods did say last year was his big year. Actually, 2022 and 2023 is when he saw most of his playing time, played in almost every game during those years. Last year, played in the first four or five games, and I believe an injury. He didn't play as much after that. But either way, still a guy that's going to, like I said, probably be plug and play on this defense with, you know, the familiarity with Coach Kelly's system, along with, you know, pedigree of, you know, if you're playing at a Power Four program, then there's no reason you shouldn't come to Jack State, plug and play, and be one of the best defenders on the team, which is going to be tough with the way that defensive line played in the J-Day game for anyone to stand out far from, you know, those two or three guys we saw rush the passer. But either way, like you said, you know, wide receiver and corner were the two positions we lost a lot of, and that's where we've added just the competition for playing time and training camp with those position groups must be really fun to watch, because there is an embarrassment of talent in those two positions now with what Coach Kelly's done. And I know that, you know, there are those of us that are on Twitter and live on Twitter like me and Brooks do for a lot of the time. You know, there are some uncertainties with what Coach Kelly was going to be when he got to Jack State, but the one thing that we knew was he was an elite level recruiter, and I think he's shown that in his first offseason. Adding talent in the positions in the way that he has, has kind of shown, check mark number one in the box. We knew that he was a great recruiter. All right, we've seen that. Now we've got to go win football games, and that's still going to be the uncertain part for now. But half the battle these days of college football is having the talent year in and year out, because your football team has so much turnover from year to year that having a recruiter like Coach Kelly is going to go a long way. So more than optimistic for sure for what this team can do. And me and Brooks did get to talk to Coach Kelly for a very, very short amount of time a couple weeks ago. And he, you know, we didn't ask him a ton of real difficult to answer questions just yet or anything, but he did seem to express a lot of optimism about where the football team is and what their goals are going to be. So, you know, if you heard the Jack Moran interview, where Jack Moran seemed like the most positive person in the state, Coach Kelly kind of echoed that positivity in the short meeting we had with him. So we can share that with you. We were really, really happy to talk to him. He's a super guy. Really, really high character, was really fun to talk to. Loves to talk football, because we were not in a setting where anything football was happening and he wanted to talk football. So it was a place where he could relax and have fun. He didn't have to talk football, and he chose to take time and talk to us for 10 or 15 minutes. So you kind of see where his priorities are, which is a good thing too. But just wanted to talk about that. Really enjoyed talking with him, and his level of optimism is certainly really good to hear.
Yeah, tremendous guy. Took the time to talk to us and ask us, you know, what we thought of the program, and you know what we did, and had a good genuine conversation. You know, he wasn't like a, you know, hi, how you doing, take a picture and then walk off. I mean, we had a good genuine conversation with him. Genuine guy, not really, really nice guy. It was a pleasure to meet him. And, we were able to get his contact information as a matter of fact. And so hopefully one day here soon, we can get in touch with him. Maybe hook something up, maybe an interview or something. Keep an eye out for it. Can't guarantee anything, but yeah, great talking to him. And yeah, just radiated positivity about where this program was, stood, in the short amount of time that he's been back in Jacksonville. And you know, I talked about the defensive backs a minute ago and, losing guys. He mentioned that, we talked about some of the guys that we lost last year and, you know, how he is able to replace those guys. And, he said the two guys that really stood out to me from last year's team, from what I was able to watch of them, was Fred Perry and Jameer Latimer. He said Jameer Latimer is going to be an absolute stud. And he said, I think Fred Perry could be the same thing. But he said the same thing that we have said several times on this podcast, that Fred Perry's he's very talented defensive back, but he's just a hothead, and so he's got to calm down some in Morgantown. So it made it sound like he said, you know, I really, really wish I could have held on to Latimer. But him saying that made it pretty clear that he was going to put in talking about those two guys, he was going to put an emphasis on getting quality defensive backs, and on top of what we already had on the roster. For the J-Day game, for him to go out and get some pretty decent talent. Like I said, Trevor Woods probably being the key one.
I think you have Jameer Latimer and Zechariah Poyser.
Where did Latimer go?
I'm not sure, but I know Poyser went to West Virginia, and Coach Kelly really talked about how good ZP was.
That may be who it is.
And wanted to keep him. Either way,
I thought it was Latimer, but
he did. Yeah, like I said, the couple things we talked about that were not based around this current roster that we'll share with you, he did express, and you guys watched it last year, how good Poyser played. He did talk about that ZP's a ball player. He's a guy who's going to play on Sunday. And he really didn't want to hold on to him. He said kind of similar things about Cam Vaughn. Losing him to West Virginia also was a guy that he really wanted to hold on to, but he really expressed high praise for Zechariah Poyser. But as you see, or as you guys have seen, I think that he has replaced the names we've lost pretty much as good as you can. So the recruiting check mark, which was the one thing we knew about him when we signed him, was that he was going to be a elite level recruiter, and he's done that in his, you know, half season at the helm so far. And like we said earlier, now it's going to be what product we see on the field August 29th in Orlando, because you turn right around after that and get Liberty. There isn't the 3-game warm up or the 4-game warm up before conference play start we saw last year, that Rich Rod took advantage of and then had a really nice year. But this team's gotta get going as soon as the first game kicks off. Other than that, only two players that we lost to the portal. I say two players, two big name contributors we lost to the portal is what I should say. I know we had a running back leave and the backup kicker left. Maybe I'm not even gonna try to remember his name. But anyway, not important. The two big names, of course, Will Osteen. Transferred out right after the spring game, and that one caught us really off guard, I think. He's at UNC, so he did take quite a step forward and is at North Carolina. And then Davion Harley, who played center last year after the Brock Roby injury, went to Cal. So two big names in the offensive line that we lost late. I know that's not the position that you want to lose names, you know, late in the portal, so especially two guys that are probably that would have started, I would imagine. But when you have the best line coach in America, it does cushion that blow a little bit, to where you may have lost, you know, two of your starters, but with Clint Trickett, Rick Trickett, running that offensive line, you know, I have great faith in his ability to find two guys to plug and play and not lose. I mean, we saw it last year, right? Brock Roby got hurt, Harley comes in, or Bubba Grayson came in, I should say, and we didn't lose any, lose anything up front after the Ruby injury. So we've seen it. You know, there's going to be offensive line injuries throughout the year. That's just a job part of that job is you've got five of those guys in the trenches with bodies falling all around their legs. You're going to have injuries throughout the year. It does suck to lose a couple of them before the season even starts to the portal, but Rick Trickett's going to get that group ready to go, and hopefully we won't miss those two for sure.
Yeah, hopefully, hopefully not too bad. And, you know, I think Osteen was going to be another pretty significant contributor. I don't think we're going to see another talent quite like Clay Webb for a little while, but I think he was going to be he was first team all conference. I think he's certainly a pretty significant piece on that offensive line. But per my sources, he got a pretty significant NIL offer to come to go to Chapel Hill and play for Bill Belichick. It wasn't a $1 million deal, but it was a pretty significant chunk of change. And you know, it's for a kid who came from White Plains, just down the road, it's hard to say no to that. You know, and again, to go, you know, whether Bill Belichick turns out to be a really good college head coach or not, you can't argue. I mean, the guy's won six Super Bowls and was on a couple of others with the Giants. So I mean, it's just you can't say no to that. You just can't. Like I said, for a kid to come from White Plains, Alabama, you can't. Can't say no. As far as I know, his brother Walker, he's still here. he's still here, and he's still on the roster. We'll see how. I don't think he's. Yeah, he's only. As a linebacker, 6'3", 200 pounds. So he's pretty. He just signed. So I know he redshirted last year. That's right. But either way, it kind of stinks for. For brothers to be separated like that, but we'll try and get as much as we can out of him, and wish those two guys nothing but the best. Not too sure where the other transfer,
Davion Harley.
Davion Harley. Not too sure where he's going to end up.
He's at Cal.
He did go Cal. That's right. That's right. I'm slipping today.
Will Osteen getting his NIL money to go to Chapel Hill. I mean, part of the reason I think it kind of blindsided us is because he is from White Plains, and you know, he did seem like such an integral part of the offense last year, you know, with him at left tackle and Clay Webb at left guard, you know, anchoring the left side of the offensive line. We just kind of assumed we'd have him no matter what. You can kind of see that if the talent is there, that you know, a big program will find you. And like you said, it's hard to turn down a significant NIL offer to go play for the best football coach in NFL history. It's hard to argue with that, I guess. He's some of our listeners will, you know, if I say he's the best football head coach of all time, we're going to get a lot of Nick Saban supporters in the comments yelling at me. So the best NFL coach of all time for sure. And how you want to grade him and Saban is simply up to you. But, really hard to turn that down. Same for Davion Harley. I don't know the situation at Cal nearly as much as what's going on at Chapel Hill. Bill Belichick coaching college football, I mean, pop your popcorn. It's going to be really interesting how that program turns out, going from Mac Brown to Bill Belichick. And it seems like they value experience in Chapel Hill, which is what they've done with their last two hires. But, nothing against what Will Osteen or Davion Harley did. It's the way that the industry is at now. We had a little bit of a conversation on Twitter about, you know, returning production, and does that even mean anything anymore? And of course it does to an extent. It's good to have guys come back that contributed to your team last year, you know, like a Michael Pettway or a Brock Recksteiner, Andrew Paul, You know, some of the names like that for JSU that'll have, you know, good returning production numbers. But we talked about what a bigger stat is returning producers, just guys that produced for anybody the year before that you now have on roster. And Trevor Woods would fall into that category. Dylan Gentry would fall into that category. Caleb Coombs would fall into that category of guys who did produce at other places that are now at Jack State. That's probably a more important statistic these days. Instead of, you know, returning production, what producers do you have on your team that no matter where they were the year before, what did they do at that school? You know, were they productive in their last year of college football? So, differences in those two ways of thinking now, I think is something to look at for JSU, just because JSU lost, you know, 25 guys to the portal, you know, the day after or even before the bowl game. And that kind of thing. We have added enough talent to supplement that loss of production. So, and again, that speaks to Coach Kelly, Coach Trickett, Coach Williams, and what these guys have been able to do out recruiting. So, anyway, we'll move on from there. Like I said, there were a couple more names we lost. We lost backup kicker. We lost a running back. We lost a long snapper at some point. Then we added the kid from Arizona State, who I'm sorry, I'm sure I butchered his last name. But either way, beyond that, before we get into the very, very end, we do have a giveaway that didn't go as planned. Most of you listening to this probably participated, but, we did run a giveaway with Clay Webb, who seemed like a shoe-in to get picked between rounds 4 and 6 or 3 and 5, depending on what, where you got your draft news at. And he just never fell, or never came off the board. So, he did sign with the Broncos. Trey Stewart signed with the Vikings. So, yeah, those two guys that are signed. I think Perry Carter is in camp with the Giants, I want to say, or he was in camp with the Giants. So, you got Clay Webb and Trey Stewart did find homes. They did actually sign. They're not just camp invites. They actually signed as UDFAs. So, of course, best luck to those guys. I do expect both those guys to keep a roster spot, especially Trey Stewart. You know, running backs is injured so much at the NFL level that you see a lot of undrafted running backs get playing time each year. I do kind of expect Stewart to keep a roster spot and see some playing time. Clay Webb will have to, of course, kind of fight through. There's a lot more competition at the guard positions in the NFL. You're going to have guys that really have the guard positions nailed down for those franchises. It's going to be much harder to get playing time there for Clay, but I do expect Trey Stewart to see the field for the Vikings. At least, you know, we'll see him in the preseason for sure, and then we'll kind of see what their tailback situation looks like and if he can play some meaningful regular season snaps in year one. But either way, we did have a giveaway. Because we did all expect Clay Webb to go off the board, and he did not. So the fairest way that we know to do it is put everybody's guess in a wheel, everybody's name, I should say, in a wheel, and spin the wheel. We are aware how anticlimactic this is, but I don't know of a better way to do it. We talked about it. This seems to be the fairest way we can. So I've got the wheel. Everyone's name's put in that submitted a guess. Again, if you are one of the 40-some-odd people that guessed, we really thank you guys for playing with us. There will be more giveaways in the future, hopefully that go according to plan. I think this was our first giveaway that didn't really work out the way we wanted it to. So hopefully in the future, they'll be better. And I'll spin the wheel here. And Jack State 66, you have won a banner. Congratulations in the most anticlimactic way possible. We will send you a message sometime tomorrow. Figure out how to get the banner to you. So congratulations. Everybody else who submitted a guess, I'm, again, sorry it didn't go the way we wanted it to. We didn't get to have the anticipation of him coming off the board and having to go find through my spreadsheet who was closest. But this was the fairest way we could think to do it. So Jack State 66, if your name on your... Nope. So we'll send you a message tomorrow and get that to you. Again, everybody else who participated, we really appreciate it. We'll have many, many more. I'm assuming there'll be some State of the Gamecocks hats in a giveaway very soon, since we have those now. So look out for those. But either way, that'll conclude the giveaway part of the podcast. I know, like we said, wasn't as fun as it's supposed to be, but either way, that's kind of where we are. But Brooks, I know we're going to talk about 30 minutes in, talk about Rich Rod for just a minute and some kind of things that you want to talk about, and then we'll see where we are.
Yeah, just once again, congratulations, Jack State 66. Wasn't quite as fun as what we planned. I genuinely, and I think everybody in the Jack State community thought he was going to get taken, like you said, somewhere in that third to fifth or fourth to sixth round at the latest. For him to go to, you know, have an All-American season that he did this year and get invited to the Senior Bowl. Read a couple comments that some scouts were really, really impressed by him. And then get invited to the draft combine where he had not a great day, but a good workout. And to see him not even get drafted, it was very shocking to me. And I think I speak for a lot of people when I say that. Trey Stewart, we kind of figured wouldn't, just because he only had the 1 year a Division I, and he blew it out of the water, no doubt. But he only really had the 1 year, and didn't get invited to a whole lot of postseason. Didn't get invited to the combine. He did get invited to the East West game. The Blue Gray game, but didn't really get a ton of carries. Didn't really flash. Still, to be signed as an undrafted free agent is certainly got a little bit easier path, to making a roster. Like you said, running backs get injured all the time in the NFL. So Jack State has had a little bit of history with Troy May Pope and briefly former Auburn running back.
Rock Thomas
ended up at the Vikings, still got in trouble. So maybe he can squeeze his way into some playing time with the Vikings. And then Clay Webb. I think Clay Webb's going to get a really good shot at making the 52 man roster, or 53 man roster, with the Broncos. But we'll just have to see, like you said, at guard, it's a little bit tougher challenge. There's a lot more high quality. That's where a lot of first, second round draft picks are taken, as offensive linemen. So it'll be tough for Clay, but I got faith. I think he's going to get a really good shot at making the roster. So, but once again, congratulations, Jack State 66. We will send you a DM. Here soon to get your contact information and get that banner mailed out to you as soon as possible. So before we headed, I wanted to address something, and this is not something super serious when I say this. I wanted to address something, and I think this needs to be the last time we address it because we are in the Charles Kelly era, and we need to be fully moved on in support of what Kelly's doing. I'm already really, really, really excited about where he's brought the program so far. But so there's two points I wanted to bring up. The first is, I've been listening to the Pate State speaker series that Josh Pate has been doing on his podcast, and he's been going around all across the country and interviewing different Division I head coaches, Kirby Smart, Shane Beamer, Lincoln Riley, you name them. Well, a couple of weeks ago, he did an interview with Rich Rodriguez, and of course, the interview was about his return to Morgantown and, what he plans to do with this second chance and, how excited and everything he is to be back and where the program's at. But he did get asked about, his time at Jack State, and what he was able to do here. And he gave a lot of really, really high praise for JSU and Jacksonville and the athletic department, and just everything, made some really, really nice comments. And even, you know, mentioned at other points in the interview his time at JCU and how much he really loved. And like I said, made some really, really high praise, made some great comments about our school and our town. And my first point, I originally wanted to bring it up because, I think that speaks volumes just to how unique and how special JCU and Jacksonville is, because you don't really see that often. You know, you don't see Billy Napier getting up and still talking about his days at Louisiana, or Mike Norvell at Memphis, or, you know, insert Power Four head coach who came from a G5 program. You just don't see him talk about their previous school the way that I think Rich Rod did, and how much he gave high praise to it. So I thought it was very classy. If you ever wonder, he didn't come out and directly say it, but he heavily implied what we had been saying for months now. If it was any other job but West Virginia, he would still be the head coach at Jacksonville State right now. And I think that, like I said, we've been saying that for months. And in case you're wondering if that's just, you know, being nice or whatever, supposedly he has not even, he still hasn't sold his house in Jacksonville. And I've heard that when his time is up at West Virginia, this is where they plan on coming back to retire. And they love Jacksonville that much. So I wanted to bring that up to point out, you know, how much, just how special Jacksonville is, how unique JSU is, and, you know, the people, the town, the community, and the support that they give Jack State and everyone, you know, everyone that comes through. Rich Rod is no exception. Now, I also wanted to bring this up because, and I'm not singling this person out because it's there's a collective group of people. It's several people who get online, and I know you can't listen to the morons online, but who still just absolutely despise Rich Rodriguez for leaving Jack State to go to West Virginia. And I don't get it because we've always been honest on this podcast about where Jack State is as a program and where we are right now compared to where we thought we were going to be 2 years ago is just, it's a light years ahead. But not just football, baseball, basketball, softball, all finding success. And I did not think we were going to be have this good of an athletics program as we do. But I don't understand it because I don't think that we would be in this position without Rich Rodriguez, at least from the football program standpoint. I think that, like we've said several times, going into that 2023 season, we were fully expecting to go around 3-9. And if we weren't ineligible at the time because of transition rules, could have been playing for a conference championship. We lucked up, yes, but we ended up playing in a bowl game in New Orleans and winning in our first year in dramatic fashion. On top of, you know, just look at, you know, look how different just, you know, the stadium and the field house and the facilities look compared to John Gross's last year to what they are now. And I think a lot of that is because of Rich Rod and his ability to find success, you know, find success in Conference USA, revenue sharing helps. Yes. But just, we're light years ahead of where I thought we would be, in Conference USA and being a division, FBS program. And I think I credit a lot of that to Rich Rodriguez. I don't understand the hate for him. That's just me.
Yeah, I agree. You make a good point. The facilities you see, the additions we've made to the stadium, the money that's being invested in the football program is not getting invested if the program is not winning. And I'm aware the program has won for a very long time now, dating back to about 2010. They have been consistently good, aside from 1 or 2 years here and there. Consistently good since 2010. So no, it's not just Rich Rod finding success, but taking a team from the FCS level to the FBS level, we've seen schools have success. We saw App State have success. We've seen Coastal Carolina have success. We have seen schools really struggle also. You know, Old Dominion has struggled. You know, Sam Houston struggled in year one, and that was an FCS powerhouse. Some would say even beyond what JSU was. I mean, Sam Houston won a national championship in 2020. At the FCS levels. So we have seen schools struggle in the move up. And for Jack State to have immediate success, not year two success, immediate year one success, speaks volumes about who your head coach is in that transition. And for better or worse, like him, hate him, whatever, it's Rich Rodriguez, and it always will be. And like I said, I've got no ill will towards the guy. I understand the move to West Virginia. Going back home, it was a place where he felt like he had an unfinished business at anyway. The way he left the program when he left the program. So, the hate online, like you said, I don't get it. I don't worry about it. I don't lose sleep over it. It is a little weird to see a coach who did so many good things for your program to be hated by, you know, so many people. At least the 25% of people that you talk to. But it is a little bit interesting to see, like you said. But it is, you know, the world we live in, right? Everyone's online. Everyone's got a burner Twitter account. They can post whatever they want to. I'm guilty of that also with Pittsburgh Pirates baseball because our franchise is doing things that should be sold over. But the hate towards him is kind of weird to see on the, like you said, for a guy that did so many good things for you. And I do think that the facility upgrades you've seen, like you said, the revenue sharing the conference does, that's the biggest thing that Conference USA does that never gets talked about, is how good the revenue sharing is in the conference. And you like wonder why schools like Liberty and Western Kentucky aren't going to leave and go somewhere else. It's because the revenue sharing in Conference USA is so good. And they do help out each and every school the best that they can. So that is not lost either. What the conference does for Jack State is a really good thing. You don't invest the kind of money into the program that you have unless you're having success. Like you don't, like, I'm sorry, but Kennesaw is not building the football stadium anytime soon. Part of the reason they're in Kennesaw, Georgia, and it's the armpit of the United States, and there's nowhere to build a stadium. But also they are really, really struggling. In that women's soccer stadium that they call home. But they're not adding additions to that stadium anytime soon because they're not having success and there's no real reason for them to. Jack State, very different. Jack State is going to be a perennial contender for the conference championship for however many years they're in the conference to come. So if you look at the facilities that Jack State has versus pretty much everyone else in the conference except for Liberty, they are better. And they are on par with what the Flames have down there, up there, I should say, in Lynchburg, where if you facilities in your conference, it's Liberty, Jack State, and Western. And everybody else is at least a step behind what we have. And the difference is Liberty's been at this level for 5 extra years than JSU has. And Western's been at this level for 20 more years than what JSU has, or 15 years more, right, while they've been up. So Jack State being on par with those two schools says a lot about how far the program has come in a very, very short amount of time, and you don't do that unless you're winning games. And like you said, say what you want to about Coach Rodriguez, he wins football games. He has everywhere he's been except for that one stint in Louisiana Monroe, and nobody can win down there. So we're not going to hold that against him. That is probably 133. If you ranked all the 134, I guess 136 now with Delaware and Missouri State, He ranked all 136 FBS schools. Winning at Monroe is like 135. Kent State's below it, and that's about it. We'll see where Kennesaw State winds up here in the next 5 years, but Monroe is a really hard place to win at. So if you look at Coach Rodriguez's coaching history and you see, well, he wasn't very good at Monroe. Well, that's because no one's good at Monroe. So you can throw those years out the window. They don't mean anything.
He was OC there, too.
Oh, he wasn't head coach. Okay. If he's the OC there, then it really doesn't mean anything. that's our last take on Coach Rodriguez. This is the Charles Kelly era. This is Charles Kelly's team. And kind of like you said earlier, the additions that he's made, there is no reason to think that this team is not going to compete for their conference championship, regardless of whatever preseason Conference USA predictions you see on Twitter. You can ignore those. They don't mean anything. The best quote in horse racing is the horses that run in the Kentucky Derby don't look at the odds. The players don't look at the preseason standings either. They don't mean anything. So don't even worry about what you see there. This team's going to go compete for a conference championship. We'll see kind of where the chips fall. This is a much better conference than what we saw last year. You know, the addition of Delaware makes the conference a better, more competitive. The addition of Missouri State will probably in the long run make them more competitive. I'm not sure what we're going to see out of Missouri State this year. I do think Delaware will handle the transition much better than the Bears will, so we'll kind of see, but Delaware should be a good team. Louisiana Tech is a team that a lot of guys are high on under Sonny Cumbie there. I'll kind of believe it when I see it. We kind of know that the defense will be good, but we're not sure where the offense is going to come from Louisiana Tech. So we'll kind of see what they are. But this should be a much more competitive conference than what we saw the last 2 years, where it really was, Jack State, Western, and Liberty, fighting for the title last year. Sam Houston was there up until the last couple of weeks also. And then the year before that, Liberty kind of ran away with the conference, and New Mexico State had their really good season with Diego Pavia, and Jack State would have finished third, or maybe they did finish third. They weren't eligible for the title game. I don't know what that did to the standings. I guess they were finished third. Had Jack State beaten Mexico State in 2023 on the last game of the season, they would have been the number two in the conference and not eligible for the title game. So we talk about, Jack State is every year they've been, or both years they've played in the conference, they would have won the title game and finished third in their first two seasons. So, new coach be damned. I think the additions that have been made, there's no reason to not expect this team to go compete for another Conference USA championship again. I don't think there's a reason to not expect them to go down to Orlando and kick ass August 29th. If you read the DraftKings odds, they're 16.5-point underdogs right now. I mean, my gosh, take Jack State to cover. I know 16.5 is not a huge number, but Central Florida won four games last year. They're getting a new old coach. Scott Frost is back for the Golden Knights. But, I don't think there's a reason not expect JSU to get on there and be competitive. I know we're not going to see what we saw last year against Louisville again, where it was, 42-14, and Jack State was never in the game. I do think that no matter what, we're going to see Jack State play competitive with UCF. But I think there's no reason not to expect them to get on there and compete for a win and be in the game all the way through the fourth quarter till the very end. Because, if you don't get it right against UCF, then, the probably the biggest game on the schedule is week two. I know we get Western Kentucky the last game of the year. I think that's a game that the conference really likes scheduling, because they kind of expect Liberty to win the regular season conference championship. And then the schedule makers really want that Western and Jack State to be a play-in game for the title. Or for the title game, that's probably the way that they in their heads are like, well, if we schedule Liberty early with JSU, then we can have that JSU Western game be like a semifinal game, basically. So that's probably the way the schedule was written. But your biggest game of the schedule is week two. So if you don't get it right there against Central Florida, then it's going to be a really tough week of practice. So I expect a heavy, heavy emphasis to be on the Central Florida game, not just because we want to go win, but because, you know, there's not the four game out of conference warm up before the regular, before the conference play starts to fix all your issues or find your quarterback like we had to do last year. So it's a much different schedule. It's a much different thought process around the program. And I do really expect Jack State to go down to Orlando and be competitive. I know I've rambled on about nine things and we're way away from what I started talking about. So I apologize for that. But, either way, that's your quick thoughts on the Central Florida matchup we're going to get in 99 days.
No, I fully agree. Build on the original point and what you said, fully expecting us to be competitive year in and year out from here on in Conference USA. I think a lot of that, those 2 years, yes, we had the ASUN year, but those 2 years under Rich Rod, get us, he left us in a very good position, and I think Charles, left us in a very good position to consistently be competitive, to be able to recruit well, to get key transfer players, to get good, big name coaches, year in and year out. And I think Charles Kelly is gonna pick up right where he left off and right where Rich Rod left off. I think the talent, it's a lot of new names. It's a lot of, both, wearing the headsets and wearing the helmets. But I think the talent wise, it's going to be a lot of what we've, gotten used to seeing over the last 2 years, in terms of competitiveness and physical ability to be able to play at this level, we didn't quite see, the last couple of years of John Gross. And I don't believe would have carried over, wouldn't necessarily carried over had we given him a couple more years. But I fully expect us to, go down to Orlando, be competitive. And, there is going to be some growing pains with this team. That's just the nature of the beast. It's a tough test going down and playing in a Power Four stadium now. Weird to say that about Central Florida, but playing in a Power Four stadium and a Power Four program, and even before they moved up to the Big 12 was, what they were able to accomplish under Scott Frost in the first tenure, in the first stint was phenomenal, and they built on that. The Gus Malzahn years weren't great, weren't terrible, but they weren't great. It's just the nature of the beast. There's not a lot of room for error, and there's not a lot of time to, make those adjustments, figure out who your team is, without taking a couple losses. Probably we're not going to be able to do what we did last year, start off 0-3, still trying to figure out who we are, still trying to figure out our offensive identity, still trying to figure out our quarterback, and have a decent season. Because if you do, you're going to start off 0-1 in conference. The first conference loss being to the probable regular season winner. And I think Charles Kelly understands this. Like I said, there's going to be some growing pains. There's going to be some struggles because, it's just the way it is when you have a completely new staff and minus the offensive line coach, and for the most part, completely new team. It's going to be new receivers, new offensive linemen, obviously a new quarterback, liable to be, multiple quarterbacks playing. We don't know. It's going to be a lot, and it's going to be a lot to figure out in a short amount of time. And you don't have a whole lot of room for error in the process. Because like I said, if you're going to do, you're going to be behind the eight ball and be behind it quick. And, it stinks. That's the way that the schedule played out. But there's nothing you can do about it other than go win the game. and go prove, you know, go prove everybody wrong and go prove, hey, you know, just because Rich Rod left and he took, you know, a lot of our production from last year left, doesn't mean that we've fallen off. And I really don't think we have. I really think we are a very similar team to what we had last year. It's going to take a little time to build some chemistry, hopefully, over the course of this spring. And once we get some, over the course of this past spring, and then over the summer leading into fall camp, with that last group of transfers that came in, get to really know each other, really get to bonding with each other, and figuring out the different qualities on the field that they like, you know, the different playing styles, different attributes that we can take advantage of. I think this is going to be a really good football team. Like I said, I don't think we're gonna fall off that much, if at all. I don't think we're gonna see a whole lot of difference from last year, other than an offensive scheme. I really think we're gonna be good. I think we're gonna and have a really good shot at playing for another conference championship, and of course making another bowl game.
Yeah, absolutely. That last thing you said there, that bowl streak, you know, means something. You know, when Florida State won 4 or 5 games under Norvell, or maybe it was under Willie Taggart, I forget who was the coach, and they had a really long streak of, you know, 15, 16, 17 years of, you know, going to a bowl game end, and you kind of saw, you know, how upset that fan base became. Obviously we are 2 years into a bowl streak, but that bowl streak does mean something. So, you know, you'd like to see that continue for the next decade plus, which I think is more than doable, at this point. So it's, I'm excited. I don't know a better way to say it other than, you know, completely new coach, new offensive scheme. The defense is going to be better than last year. I think that's almost a given at this point with what we saw in the spring game, especially what they have up front with Oibadejo and Jacob Cruz and Curtis Perry. I think the defense will be an improved unit. We'll just kind of see, you know, the offense probably won't be as prolific as what we saw Rich Rod run. Very few offenses are. But kind of like Jack Moran said last time we recorded, if they're going to throw the ball to win or throw the ball to score, run the ball to win, and they can do what they want to offensively, you may not see them score 42, 49, 56 points a game like they did in conference last year, but you may see a lot more, you know, 28-7 wins where they just kind of control the ball, control the game offensively. And if that's what the offense is designed to do, then, you know, it will be as good as last year's offense, just in a very different way. So that'll be something to kind of look forward to also. But we've got 99 days left of this back and forth and what if and what'll happen and all that stuff. So like every year, it's meaningless. It doesn't mean anything. If you're listening to us at the 59-minute mark right now, this doesn't mean anything because the games haven't been played yet. We don't know who's going to play, where they're going to play, or when they're going to play. So it's fun to sit here and talk about, but at the end of the day, you know, only thing that matters is the product on the field, and for Jack State, that product has to be pretty sharp by week two for Liberty. So, all right, we'll cut it short there. We're about an hour into it, so like we always say, if you guys have made it this far, we really appreciate it. Again, congrats to the Twitter handle JackState66. We'll get the banner to you here in the next few days. We'll get that delivered or mailed or however we decide to do it. If everybody else, if you don't follow us on Twitter, go follow us over there. We do a ton of stuff. Tomorrow's Throwback Thursday day. We have one of those set up ready to go. We're going to try to post a picture of every player that wears jersey number 99 through number 1 all the way down to kickoff, but finding some of these jersey numbers is really tough. We may have to go, want to find someone on the active roster. We may have to go old school with some of the jersey numbers that might be hard to find. So You'll see that also. But again, go follow us over there on Twitter if you haven't already. And other than that, we will see you guys here in a few weeks, and we'll do some more meaningless talking then.
Sounds good. Yeah. Thanks to everyone who listens in, and thanks for everyone. Thanks to everyone who entered the contest. Sorry, it didn't quite turn out the way we thought it was going to. That was a big shock for all of us. But it all kind of worked out in the end. Congratulations, Jack State 66. We will get that banner to you as soon as possible, and hopefully get that hung up in your man cave, in your Jack State room, wherever you see fit. But thanks everyone for listening. Thanks everyone for entering the contest, and we'll talk to you guys again soon.